Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capo Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. What's going on today?
Oh, nothing. We have the winner of Top Chef coming on, the Top Chef, who was announced just last night, or two nights ago.
Yeah, Hung won Top Chef, and he's going to be on with us in the next segment. He represented himself very well, I think.
I think he's an impressive fella. But I want to talk briefly about how this weather is messing me up.
Okay.
I have a cocktail program all set out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny because it has effects on the restaurant business as well. I put my winter clothes down my summer clothes down in my cellar. Now, I'm an urban dweller. I live in a condominium in Jersey City. So to get my cellar, I have to go down three floors outside and lift up an iron door and go into a cage and put my stuff. So I have switched. All my linen suits are downstairs because you can't wear linen after Labor Day.
Well, you can.
Right, you're not supposed to. It's a dork. That's the rule. You can't wear linen
even if you live in Cuba.
If you live in Cuba, it's different.
Well, I think if you live in Cuba, you should be allowed to wear.
But it's getting more Cuba-like. Here is the problem. You know, I have some, you know, nice tweed jackets, and I have some sweaters and stuff. What the hell am I going to do with them?
Nice. Is that the word you're going to use right now for tweed?
Yeah, well, they're not really tweed. There's like patterns, like fall patterns. But you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah, sure, of course.
So I have this crossover clothes that are neither here nor there. And what struck me was the parallel with what's going on in the restaurant. And what's going on in our sidewalk cafe. We have a sidewalk cafe it's a beautiful amalgam of plants and flowers. And
that usually on October 1st every year comes in and is not allowed to go out until May 1st.
Well, it's still out there,
mm-hmm.
Because it's 82 degrees a couple of days this week.
Yep.
And you talk about how global warming is affecting, you know, food production. That's a whole different show in and of itself. But it's sort of affecting the cycles of our lives in some other ways that I think, forget the clothes, but part of it is how we eat.
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking at some of the fall dishes we have pending, and they're not going on the menu yet because you know, the butternut squash soup that's, you know, made to be a hearty, rich dish that we were thinking about.
I had someone bring me local tomatoes just a couple of days ago, and I was like, but you can't be...
It's October.
Well, I guess you are. Okay.
The other thing is I'm looking at, we're talking with the chef about the menu every day, and there are things mm-hmm. we had planned to sort of move toward, and it's not that the ingredients aren't available.
Right.
It's that...
The fall ingredients are ingredients that are generally available.
There are just certain ways that we want to eat when it gets colder mm-hmm. outside. And I'm looking at the bar, I'm changing the bar program over. Now, I have lost some of the fresh ingredients that we were using for some of our summer cocktails,
right.
The fresh local cherries, the fresh local strawberries.
Berries are done.
And we've moved away from those things. And we have some great cocktails. I mean, they're eternal cocktails, like the Ramos Fizz, you know,
right.
12 months a year, the Martini, the Manhattan.
Right. But moving into the warm cocktails, in October, we should be thinking about warm apple ciders and hot toddies.
That's exactly the point.
And those kinds of things.
I've been talking with our head bartender for about 3 weeks about when's the hot apple cider going to come out. When's the hot apple cider going to come out? Who the heck wants hot apple cider now? See, I got shorts on. You know, but it's funny. We're looking for in October. You know, you're starting to get into the pre-Halloween era. You think pumpkins on the bar, and I have an induction burner behind the Captain Lombardi bar where mm-hmm. we're all ready to have hot apple cider, mulled
right.
cider, waiting for you to put rum or bourbon in it and have it in a glass. But it's foolish to put it out.
Yeah.
We have other drinks coming up for the winter. There's a Tom and Jerry, which is a
right. We've talked about
hot,
on the show before. I love a
batter based drink. But you know, I'm drinking gin and tonics these days.
Right, exactly. I'm thinking where's my summer drink? If I'm drinking apple right now, it's going to be some kind of apple martini with apple juice in it, not a warm apple cider drink.
So I think it's interesting how as the climate changes, how it's going to affect how we eat and when we dine out, you know, because we're into the fall. It feels incongruous to me. You know, there are certain foods I associate with the change of seasons. And there's certain months, actually, that I associate with change of seasons.
But you even see, even right now, for instance, we sell a lot more seafood in the summertime than we do in the wintertime. We sell a lot more meat in the wintertime.
It's just the nature of how people
just
eat.
Just how we eat. And I'll tell you, seafood is flying out the door right now. And obviously, some of that is our changing tastes, and we're eating healthier. And we're eating,
seasonal.
But some of it is seasonal, and I know that it's seasonal. I've been doing, I've been in my restaurant for 15 years. I know what to expect and what not to expect.
Talk to me, Mark, about what you see as the foods that are the harbinger of the fall. What are you waiting for when it gets cold outside?
Well, you think of, and I'm going to start actually not necessarily with the foods and the protein on the plate, but I think of, you talked about pumpkin before and some of those pumpkin pie spices, and I think of, cloves and that are kind of that autumnal spice rack that you move to when it's the autumn, when it's the fall. You start to change your mindset to get some of those harder spices into your cooking.
Well, but I also think of, I tend to eat heavier in the colder months. Mm-hmm. I think it's a natural progression. I think it's partially necessary. It comes out of it having been necessary in the past. I lead a not extremely athletic lifestyle, so I don't know that I'm not out there working in the cold every day, so I don't need it. But, I like goose, for example. Mm-hmm. I love goose. Now, that's not a very popular meat in the United States, but you can get fresh goose in the fall. I don't want goose.
Right.
I mean, who wants a big roasted stuffed bird now?
And a high fat content bird too. You feel like you're all weighted down. You don't. That's not the way you eat when it's hot out. And part of the reason is because it's hot out.
And the other implications are in wine. Some of our listeners may not know. Some of you out there may not realize that Zinfandel is a grape, and it's the grape from which they make white Zinfandel, which is a fairly innocuous, sweet wine. It's bubblegum wine. It's just, it's a beverage. It's like a soda. It's mm-hmm. nothing. But real Zinfandel, red Zinfandel, has been, it's not quite indigenous, but it's an almost indigenous American grape. And it tends to make, when you have a red Zinfandel, it makes very spicy, very weighty, very fruity, sometimes tannic and very alcoholic wines with a high level of alcohol. And these spicy, rich wines are traditionally associated with the fall. And I always get Zinfandels in the fall.
Right, Zinfandel, Petite Syrah.
And these are wines, because they're so big, that go really well with, mm-hmm. Big game and steaks and things like that. And I just, it's still Pinot Noir.
Well, exactly. I have people looking at me saying, where's the Australian section of your list, the Australian Shiraz section? And I'm like, nobody's buying Australian Shiraz this time of year.
Because the Australian Shiraz are big, powerful, mm-hmm. rich, high in alcohol.
Yeah, it's true.
And they go well with the weather. So I just think it's interesting to see how the change of climate is affecting our eating habits. And I don't think we quite know where that is yet, but it's just another thing to look at in the long run.
Well, it's certainly making a change in our restaurant, and I'm sure that's got to be making a change in your homes. I mean, it just has to be.
It's sort of funny to see that the ingredients available aren't matching up with the things that you would normally do them mm-hmm. in this weather, and I think it's interesting to see how that's going to change over time. But let's leave that there, and we'll come back in a moment or two, and we'll talk with America's latest newly crowned top chef, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And in Restaurant Guys tradition, we have on with us the winner, the recently crowned top chef from the reality television series on Bravo. Hung Nguyen is executive sous chef at Las Vegas' Guy Savoie restaurant, but more importantly, he is America's recently crowned top chef.
Hey, Hung, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing today?
We're doing great. So you ready to be a celebrity?
Well, I'm ready to be a chef first.
Well, the thing that was different about this year's Top Chef, and Mark and I love the show, as do most of our listeners, but what was different about this show was they didn't announce who the winner was until well after the taping was done. You just found out two nights ago.
Wednesday night, you found out that you were Top Chef when we all found out.
That must have been a stressful couple of months for you.
it was really bad because I had a lot of sleepless nights.
Did you think that you had won it, or were you unsure? How would you handicap the race?
I was definitely really, really unsure because they're all great chefs up there. but only one can be top chef. And I was pretty confident in my skills and the food that I put out. So I felt that I had a really, really good chance.
All right, so many of our listeners have seen the show, but many of them haven't. Your culinary skills are pretty amazing. Your technical skills are, but you are a wonder to watch butcher things. Now you had obviously seen the prior episodes of Top Chef.
Yes.
Did you find anything surprising, or was it what you expected to have the competition go?
Was the competition what you thought it would be?
Definitely. I mean, they throw a lot of surprises at us. They don't let us know what's going to happen next, so we find out everything the last second. It's really hard. It's harder than it looks.
How long was the taping, the original taping? How long do they keep you sequestered?
It depends on when you get eliminated, but I was there till the end, so that took about 5-6 weeks.
Now, that seems like a long time to...
Oh, yeah.
To be, you know, not know who's going to wake you up early in the morning and say, okay, you're cooking me breakfast today, to not know that, you know, tomorrow you're going to be spending 20 hours on the line. It just seems like a long time to be on edge like that.
It's long. That's why it's really stressful. That's why some people lose it. Some people I just kind of slipped away a little bit towards the end, and then I picked myself back up. It's really, really stressful because you don't get to talk to anybody, so your sense of reality is just lost. You don't know where you are. You don't know what's going on. You don't know what time of the day it is.
One of the things that people find interesting about the Top Chef's show is that there are realistic cooking problems that people face.
Yes.
But there's also a human element to the show. I mean, to be thrown together with that many other contestants, other culinary professionals who are all vying for the same position. Was there a sense of camaraderie? Do you guys work together at all, or is it strictly competition? How does that work?
Well, I mean, at home, we were all friendly with each other at home. You know, there was no issue there. But during competition, I took it like a competition, and I separated myself with that. You know, I didn't go there to be to find my next best friend. You know, I was there to win this competition. And when it was time to help out each other, I helped. When it was time to be by yourself and win, and that's what I did. And I was they were talking behind my back saying that, oh, I'm not a team player, blah, blah, blah. But every team I was on, I won.
Right.
Or the team won.
I felt like, and you know, I'm in the business and been doing this for a long time, but this is a competition, and I felt like many times people were looking at you like, you know, why aren't you helping this person in this competition? But you're actually competing against them. And I kept saying to myself and saying to my wife as we were watching together, or my son, who I watched with a lot, you know, this is a competition. You know, you don't want to make somebody, you don't want to cause someone to do something incorrectly.
But by the same token, on a game show, you don't lean over to your other contestant and go, psst, hey, you know the answer to this one? Can you help me out a little bit?
And I can't believe they expected that from me. Just because I'm a little faster and I work with better skills. And
right.
They expect me to help.
Well, a lot of that happened, and this is one of the things that Francis and I were talking about before we had you on the show. A lot of what happened was simply your knife skills and a lot of the technical skills that you brought to the table were simply faster than a lot of the other people you worked with.
Yes.
And if you were doing the same task, you were accomplishing it faster. You have 10 minutes left over and they have no time left over, I didn't quite understand that. We're not talking about the team competitions, because I think in the team competitions you need to work as a team.
But what I'm talking about
are the individual competitions.
Yeah.
Well, to catch the audience up, what would happen is Hung would often finish in advance, and then people would look at him to help out, and he, as I, would not have said, you know, you're on your own, pal.
And I stood around just double-checking my own work, or, you know, just staying back, you know, and just myself.
You know where I thought that came from, and I really did understand sort of why the other people were looking for a little help. I think that comes from, as Hung, you know, being, you know, with your long career in the restaurant business and through our, when you're in a kitchen and something goes wrong, there really is no I in team. If you get an extra minute and you're in the cold side and the guy on the hot side's in the weeds, you jump over there, or the other way around, or the salad guy needs help, or you need help expediting. That in a real
especially if you're one of the top guys, you move to the hot spot.
Definitely.
In a real professional kitchen, I mean, you're executive sous chef at Guy Savoy in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
If one of your guys needs help, you go over there and help him. But that wasn't what this was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was it was a whole different thing. But I sort of understand why emotionally you're in a kitchen, you get yourself in that environment, and you need help. You call for anybody for help, and you expect people to come your way. And I think I think that's a different than a competition.
You know, Hung, when we come back, I want to talk with you about the most creative dish that I've ever seen on Top Chef, and the one that I will always remember that you didn't get a lot of credit for, but you got a lot of credit in my book for.
We'll be back in just a moment talking more with America's contemporary hot chef, Hung Nguyen, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagat and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're talking today with Hung Nguyen. He is America's most recently crowned Top Chef.
Hung, you know that Francis and I have been captivated by the show like most of America. Congratulations on being Top Chef. But what I have to ask you is from where you – one of the challenges wasn't an elimination challenge. It was a quick fire challenge. Was you each got an aisle in the grocery store, and your aisle was the cereal foods aisle, which if I were you, I would have been like, oh, no, I can't believe I got the breakfast foods aisle. What am I going to make out of this? And can you tell our audience about what I believe to be one of the most creative, best dishes ever made on Top Chef?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge was to make something beautiful and then edible. And a Miami theme, so I thought steak, beautiful, you know. So I decided to create something like a landscape where, you know, it looks beautiful. And there's not much you can do with just coffee and a box of cereal, you know. That's really tasty. So I went and had fun and kind of poked fun at the challenge.
Yeah, it was. Basically, Hung built a diorama on the plate with an egg yolk for a sun and Fruit Loop. Pathway. It was
rivers with the blue ones. It was cool.
The only problem, Hung, is that Mark's son has been asking him to recreate that for breakfast.
No way. That's funny.
You've gotten a lot of parents in trouble.
My 8-year-old is like, how come my breakfast never looks like that?
Daddy, you're a restaurateur. You should be able to do that. So if you're ever in Central Jersey and you want to make Mark's kid happy, stop by.
But I don't think it was the most flavorful dish ever made on Top Chef.
Oh, definitely not.
But it was really creative. I mean, they put you in the cereal aisle, and you created this beautiful picture. And I think that particular task, went a little bit out of bounds of what Top Chef normally does, but I think you went with it, it was great.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to listen to the news. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Hung Nguyen, America's Top Chef, about maybe some of the more serious dishes that he put together to win this coveted competition. We'll be back in just a few minutes. 1450 WCTC, the time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hung Nguyen was born in Vietnam, trained in classic French and Asian cuisine. He is now the executive sous chef at the famed restaurant Guy Savoy in Las Vegas. But more important and overshadowing all of that, he is America's current top chef, just crowned on Wednesday night.
So, Hung, this year, one of the things that I noticed about season 3 that was different from seasons 1 and 2 is the villain aspect was not played up as much as it was in seasons one and two. Do you think that was done on a technical side, that they just didn't play it up as much, or do you think that's because you guys saw what happened to the people who were vilified in the first couple seasons?
That's exactly what happened. We all agreed that we're all going to be professionals and just not try to create so much drama like the first two seasons.
There's drama. That's okay. Melodrama, though, is what we're not crazy about.
Yeah, melodrama. Yeah, we didn't want to be like, we want to be more professional and more food-oriented.
I think one of the things that's very interesting about this show is there is the people aspect, and then there's also the cooking aspect and seeing, where the rubber hits the road, And all the chefs, I think Top Chef does a great job overall of picking chefs with a variety of backgrounds. I think since the first season, they've picked more and more professional folks to be on the show.
Right.
You all come from different backgrounds. How did you find that people's culinary experiences and backgrounds and ethnic backgrounds and experiences in ethnic cuisines, and you are broadly, you have a broad experience. How do you find that came to play on the different challenges that were on Top Chef?
Well, I guess some people did better than others. They have barbecue challenge. I'm sure some people would do much better than I can, and versus like the land challenge and then the frozen food challenge. So everyone had expertise in each area that did really well. And everyone was good. If everyone was hardcore trained in French cuisine like I was, then it wouldn't be a really exciting show to watch.
It'd
be really serious.
I thought one of the things that was very interesting, and this is a quote from you, when you had to cook for the cowboys, your quote was, "What do cowboys eat? Baked beans, and baked beans."
What I meant was, cowboys eat the same food as we eat, It's like it's just like a joke. It wasn't like I was so ignorant that I didn't know what they ate.
It was hysterical, though. It was funny.
Yeah, it was
provided
funny.
A moment of levity. But I think it's interesting when you take someone out of their culinary frame of reference, which is what this show does, and you see how different people with different backgrounds thrive on different challenges.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes you see how people bring those different frames of reference to the same ingredient, and you get very different things.
Oh, yes.
Let's talk about all that criticism, okay? Because it's very hard for any chef, no matter what level they're at, to take that much criticism about their food.
It's a little harsh.
Francis and I are not chefs, but in our restaurant, basically, every dish before it goes out is, the two of us and our chef sit down and we confer and we talk about each dish.
Right.
And we try not to be nearly as harsh as they are on Top Chef when there's something we like or don't like. How do you deal with that type of criticism being foisted upon you on dishes that you know are at least pretty good?
Yeah, I respected like 90% of the judges on the panels. Like some of the guest judges I felt were not qualified to judge my food and talk that way about my food. I felt that they were wrong and they're totally playing it up for, camera time. And that's when you see me talking back. But you don't see me talking back to Govan Armstrong when he didn't like my dish, but I respect him and I respect his opinion.
You talk about respect. It was funny because in one of the later episodes, Brian is very proud of his dish. Until Eric Repair says something like, "Isn't it your role to choose which cheese they use?" And
yeah.
Brian's like, "Yeah, you're probably right."
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing. Even I thought one of the things I thought was most interesting was when Eric Repair was on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
Even the judges that were judging seemed to defer to Chef Repair's judgment.
Yeah, he's a three Michelin star chef, his words are like...
He's a top, and he's been four-star chef in Manhattan for New York Times, four-star chef in Manhattan for long as I've been in the business.
Can't argue with him.
What was it like for you working with some of these top chefs? I thought there was a particularly interesting challenge where Todd English, Rocco DiSpirito, and Michelle Bernstein were assigned to the finalists as sous chefs. So here you have these other really great chefs working as your sous chef. What was that like?
It was such a humble experience. It was a great experience. You would never be able to do that in real life, ever, ever.
Have Rocco DiSpirito as your sous chef?
Have Rocco DiSpirito chop shallots for you? Yeah, probably not.
Exactly. It would never, ever happen. But I also took it very seriously. This is my chance to win. This is my show now. So I treated them like a sous chef, and I needed respect, and I needed them to follow my command. And Rocco did a great job supporting me. He played the role of a sous chef, and with that, he helped me win.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to tell you that I think that you drew the right knife as far as chef skills.
Oh yeah,
I mean Rocco. God, I'm sorry.
It was perfect. It was just everything was aligned that day. You know, all the stars were aligned. It seems like, you know, everything worked itself.
Rocco di Spiritu has made one of the top five meals of my life for me.
Really?
Yeah, he's super. Union Pacific, one of the great meals of my life. Rocco made it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great chef, you know, and he needs respect.
You know, that you bring up a good topic though. Now you've worked broadly in a lot of different kinds of restaurants, and now you're on Top Chef. And I thought an interesting thing when we saw these you know famous chefs become sous chefs to the Top Chef contestants. In kitchens today, there are certain guys, even some of them on TV, who sort of hew to the old school mantra of, if you don't like what's going on in your kitchen or what the job someone's doing is, you should scream and humiliate them until they cry or leave the kitchen, or you know, if it's you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen kind of way. I don't subscribe to that philosophy myself. Do you? And it seems as though on Top Chef, everything they try to run a very respectful note down the line. Let's ask your opinion, not just on the show, but on kitchens in general. I mean, because there was that old school pot throwing maniac chef, and I think he's a dying breed. There's a couple of them left, but they should die. You know, I'm not. What is your style like in a real kitchen?
Well, I mean, I train like that under a lot of great French chefs. And, you know, they yell at you, beat you, they punch you, but you know what? It's the hard way. It's like being in the military. They make strong, hardcore chefs. You know, but in today, you know, you have to be, there's laws, there's all these things involved, so we have to treat our workers totally different. And that's fine. And when I talk to my cooks, I'm still screaming when they do something wrong and when there's like $300 meal on the line, but I don't scream with them to put them down or humiliate them. It's just like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, just do it over again, you know, but never putting them down.
Yeah, I think that's an advance in kitchen. And the no punching laws I'm in favor of. I'm definitely in favor of the no punching laws.
You know, speaking of illegal, Hung, are you aware that when you made that sous vide chicken dish in New York City that you were breaking
the law? Yes, it is illegal, yes, it is.
You broke the law on national TV.
Hey, it's legal in Colorado, I guess.
I'm not sure that it's actually illegal if you don't sell it.
I got an idea. Why don't we bring up the audience and not assume everyone knows what sous vide cooking is?
Absolutely.
Sous vide is a method of cooking that is really a very important method of cooking today, used in high-end restaurants and actually used in other applications as well, but it's done with a low temperature. And in some cities and states that have outdated health laws, that it's cooked at a low temperature but very safely. But some cities and states, and New York City is one of them, sous vide is technically illegal. They don't have standards that account for the way sous vide keeps things safe. But, of course, everyone just ignores the law and cooks with it anyway. But we saw it on national TV.
Yeah, let's have a HACCP plan,
yeah, well,
I think.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back with Hung Nguyen. He's America's top chef. He's your top chef. And we'll be back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC, it's 1144. Tired of paying ATM fees? Well, transfer your account to Magyar Savings Bank and never pay an ATM fee again. Open a Magyar Bank free checking account with direct deposit, and they'll reimburse any fees charged by other banks for using their machine anywhere. Plus, with a Magyar free checking account, you'll enjoy the convenience of banking when you want, where you want. Magyar's free checking comes with free online banking, online bill pay, and a Magyar debit card that can be used worldwide to access your money. Moving your checking account to Magyar Bank is easy. Their switch kit includes everything you need to have your paycheck or recurring payment deposited directly into your Magyar free checking account. With branches in New Brunswick, North Brunswick, and Kendall Park and Branchburg, you'll receive personalized, friendly service you expect from a community bank. Discover the Magyar experience for yourself and get free ATMs everywhere you go. Visit a branch today and open a Magyar free checking account. For more information, visit their website at www.magbank.com or call 888-990-BANK. That's 888-990-BANK, Magyar Bank, member FDIC.
Great.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys from Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're talking with America's top chef, Hung Nguyen, recently crowned.
You know, Hung, I'm watching the show, and I'll tell you again, I'm watching just the other night, And I watch a contestant. I watch Casey making a foie gras and scallop dish. And as I'm watching the show, I see that she's putting salmon roe on her scallops.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, well, scallops and foie, that works great, but that salmon roe is going to mess up the dish. And I lean over to my wife, and I'm like,
uh-oh,
she shouldn't put that salmon roe on
uh-oh
that dish. She's making a mistake.
Yeah.
And then a couple minutes later, the judges say pretty much the same thing. Are you too... Is your head too down and just focused on what you're doing, or do you, as a fellow contestant, sometimes see the bad roads that other people are going down?
Oh, I see it, and that's why sometimes you see me stand in the corner making my little, you know, and sometimes you see me making little funny faces,
uh-huh,
you know, and that's what I'm reacting to, and they kind of use those faces and change it around on me when they edit it. So
you know what's funny is when I go to a restaurant. And I think there is a school of thought that says, you know, let's combine something that sounds counterintuitive, that when you put it on a menu, it sounds like it's going to be not great. It's an unusual combination that's maybe not going to be good. And then to have it great. I view that, I call it as the throwing down the gauntlet dish, you know. And whenever somebody would, like if I had seen that on the menu and someone said, you know, scallops and foie gras and salmon eggs, I would think, you know what, I'm going to order that.
Yeah,
but if it's terrible, I'm gonna mock you. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, definitely. I'm willing to try anything.
But you know, I Francis and I talk about this all the time too. You know, there was a dish that we had at a little restaurant in the city on across the street from the 92nd Y called
Solia. Yeah, we were out with Gail Green.
It was a tomato sauce spaghetti with strawberries, and we were like, okay,
whoa,
let's try it.
We were out with Gail Green. We went out to dinner, and she was writing about the restaurant for New York Magazine, and they had strawberries, balsamic vinegar, and tomato sauce on pasta. And you know, Gail Green's eating around a lot. And the three of us look at each other and we're like,
uh-oh,
okay, right, you show me that. But it was awesome.
It was awesome.
Really?
Okay. Oh, my God.
I was surprised and amazed. And that's what a great chef is supposed to do. They're supposed to surprise and amaze.
You throw it on that gauntlet, I'm going to pick it up. You better wow me. So how,
was that like, yeah.
Go ahead. What were we going to ask?
Was that like a marinara sauce or just like a fresh tomato?
No, it was like a marinara sauce.
Yeah, that was the shocking part. It was shocking.
Svolia, S-F-O-G-L-I-A.
You know, there wasn't oregano, and you know, the tomato sauce itself was pretty clean, but I was shocked.
S-F-O-G-L-I-A, Svolia, on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. So, Hung, let's talk about you. How did you get into cooking? Where are you from? How does this work? Is this a tremendous achievement for you?
How do you get from Vietnam to Guy Savoie?
Wow. I came over here. My dad escaped to America in 79, 78, and then he sponsored us over back in 86. And, you know, I grew up in Massachusetts, and I fell in love with cooking, watching TV shows, cooking shows instead of cartoons when I was a kid. And my parents owned a Vietnamese restaurant, and I started helping out when I was 11, 12 years old, working in the kitchen, playing with a knife, and just chopping random, anything laying around, I would chop, you know.
Uh-huh.
Practice and play, and had a great time. And by the time I was 13, 14, I realized, hey, I'm pretty good at this, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's obvious that you're good at it.
And then I decided that I'm going to go to CIA. And from that point on, I just concentrated on my career.
Now, talk to me about CIA. I mean, CIA is some of our guests have come on our show and said CIA, tremendous, tremendous base. You know, you really need to go there to help get the basics down in a much quicker way to do it than apprenticing. And others have come on our show and said, you know, culinary education with what it costs today and the amount of debt you come out in, really there are better ways to get the basics down, maybe through apprenticing. Where do you come down on that?
Well, I believe in both, because a culinary school that definitely gives you the time and devotion that you need and the proper education that you need, like book works, math works, and all that stuff. For apprentice, you could be trained underneath a very famous chef and be peeling potatoes and picking parsley for the next 6 months. So it's a pros and cons to both. You know,
yeah,
but I mean, what I did was I went to I gained all my life experience before going to culinary school, after going to culinary school, and I worked for big name chefs. So I did both.
Yeah, my advice to anybody who's considering culinary school is go work in a kitchen for a little while.
Go work and see how and feel it out and see if it's really for you.
You know what's funny is we've had some folks come through our organization, who from the CIA and from other places who have you know, gone to culinary school right out of, say, high school or maybe a year after high school, and then go through culinary school and then come into our organization and work as an extern,
right,
and decide at that point, mm-hmm, that they don't like the business. You know, that's
exactly.
After you spend all that money on a culinary education, that's a hell of a time to figure out that, you know, I like this in,
right,
school, but the way it is in reality, I'm not crazy about it. You know, I think that's...
I mean, to be a chef, it's hard work. You know, it takes a lot of hard work, dedication, and sacrifice. And people think just because you graduate from culinary school, you're going to be the next superstar. That's not the case. It's a lot of hard work.
Actually, that's the base of the pyramid.
Actually, Hung? It was the case for you. You're the top chef. You're the exception to the rule. So what's in the future for Hung Nguyen?
On the future right now, future looks very bright. You know, I have a lot of offers back in Vegas and in New York City,
and a fair amount of money.
And it's a good amount of money. And so I'm gonna weigh everything out. And most likely, I'd like to come back to New York.
Is that your favorite city to cook in the United States? Do you think that's the epicenter of?
That is definitely, if not the world.
All right, so when you come back to New York, are we going to get together for a drink?
Oh, yeah.
All right. It's a deal.
I'll tell you, Hung, one of the things that, and you know, I know Francis was getting ready to wrap up, but I just have to tell you this, and I'm sure you've heard it from a lot of people, but you guys did kind of a skills relay race in one of the episodes, and where you gained a lot of culinary respect from the culinarians in my restaurants, at least, you know, when the chefs were, what you got the chefs talking about was when in that relay race, you were butchering chickens like the fastest guy I've ever seen butcher chickens in my life.
Oh, thank you.
It was a pretty amazing thing to watch.
It's all about the basics.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun. We haven't done it in so long. You know, I was surprised myself.
Well, Hung, I want to thank you for coming and being on the show with us. It was great to watch you all season long, and congratulations on your victory. It was well-deserved.
Yeah, congratulations. You definitely deserved it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, we'll look for great things from Hung Nguyen, ladies and gentlemen. He is America's top chef, recently crowned. We'll be back with the Restaurant Guys in just a moment. 1450 WCTC, the time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Just got off the phone with America's top chef, just crowned 2 days ago. Pretty big stuff.
You know,
they all come on the Restaurant Guys, Mark, don't they?
They do.
They all come on the Restaurant Guys.
You know, one of the things that I found amazing is Bravo does these show polls. And while they're doing the poll, they're you're watching what's going on, and the there were three people in the finals: Dale, Casey, and Hung. And clearly, Dale and Hung were doing a better job at this in the finals. It was clear. But the audience is polled, and Casey is super nice, okay? And obviously, you know, somebody who people would root for,
yep,
in this kind of an atmosphere. Very pretty, very nice. She had it all, okay? She had it all. She wasn't technically as skilled as Hung or Dale. But she did a great job. She did a great job and advanced a lot farther than a lot of people thought she was going to. But they did this in-show poll of who should win Top Chef.
Well, let me guess. And the nice hottie came out on top,
Not just on top, okay? Hung got about 20% of the vote. Dale got about 20% of the vote. And she got almost 60% of the vote. I was like, she's getting killed.
Well,
she's getting obliterated on this show right now, and you guys are phoning in saying, vote for her, and I was just like...
Because she's a really nice hottie.
Yeah, that's...
By the way, which is not to take away, I don't want to be misconstrued as... Mm-hmm. My remarks to be misconstrued as take away her skill level. She did make it to the final round.
And was great, and I think kept surprising and amazing people all the way through the show. I think, to me, she was the biggest surprise. She just gained speed as she went along.
Well, but it's good, I think, that the show is judged by those professional chefs, mm-hmm, who are overwhelmingly
agreed
qualified.
Agreed.
And it's interesting to see what the audience would say. But, you know, the nice thing about this show is the rubber meets the road in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And you got guys who know how to judge that food. And the thing about it is, look, you and the television audience, you can't taste the food. You can't smell the food.
Right. You need to rely on those judges.
And I think it's a great show. I really do.
Yeah, I really do. I really like it.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this show, our hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12:00.